a new series this morning, and if you're here wondering, I wonder if the pastor's going to teach us how to be rich, the answer is yes. Today is the day. And we will spend a short time here this month, specifically the month of November, working through a series called How to Be Rich, and specifically learning to do more, give more, and find more in who God is. And there's a book that we would love for you to pick up and read along with us so that you could grow on your own before you leave today at the welcome wall. We sell these self-study little supplemental materials so you can grow on your own. And it's our hope that you wouldn't just learn here together on Sundays. We believe that that's something called listening, but in between Sundays is where you actually learn, where you can study and grow deeper and learn on your own. And I know for many of you, you've given me some great feedback that that's been helpful and effective for you, and we hope that you do the same. A real easy-to-read book called How to Be Rich. And we're going to start where Paul, the apostle, is speaking to a young leader, and he's telling the young leader how to deal with rich people. And the apostle Paul is teaching Timothy, and he's telling Timothy, Timothy, I want you to pay attention to the rich people. Pay attention to them. And I want to tell you how to deal with them. So we're going to look at that passage today in Timothy. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 17, if you would turn there with me. And we'll start at verse 17 and end at verse 17 today. There's a great passage there, and we will kind of work through that in the weeks to come. But here's what Paul says to Timothy. He says, Timothy, teach those who are rich in this world not to be proud and not to trust in their money, which is so unreliable. Their trust should be in God, who richly gives us all we need for our enjoyment. So there's three words I want to point out here today, and we're going to walk through this together. The first one is teach. Then there's another word that is trust. And then another word, gives. And that's how we're going to kind of frame our message here today. Teach, trust, and gives. There's three parts. There's a teaching part, there's a trusting part, and there's a giving part, and we're going to look at all three of those today. And basically what Paul is teaching Timothy is this. There are rich people in our world, and they need to learn. They need to learn. And the big idea today is rich people need to learn how to trust in their reliable God instead of their unreliable wealth. And for many of you who experienced a financial crash in 2008 and maybe some other portions of your life, you recognize that if there's one way to describe wealth or money or assets or investments, it is the word unreliable. And for many people, they learn the hard way. But Paul is saying to Timothy, Timothy, I want you to teach rich people how to be rich. They have to learn how to be rich. Rich people need to learn how to trust in a reliable God instead of putting their trust in unreliable wealth. Well, how much money does it take to be rich? And for a lot of people, we kind of feel like it takes really twice as much money as we currently have. And for many people, the idea of being rich is simply this. Whatever I earn, if it were double that, I'd be on my way, right? Most of us probably believe that we are not rich. In our own minds, we're not rich. Rich is what someone else experienced. Rich is what other people experience. And I've always imagined that being rich is when you accumulate enough to cover something that Andy Stanley in his book calls all imaginable eventualities. Let me say it again. Andy Stanley uses this phrase in his book called all imaginable eventualities. And what he means is anything that you can imagine that will eventually require money is how much it would you would actually need in order to be rich. So some of the reasons why most of us don't feel rich is because we recognize that there are some eventualities that we can imagine happening to us, and if those were to happen to us, we would need some money to cover it. And if we had the money to cover it, we'd be rich. We'd have enough. And if you've ever thought to yourself, I need more money to save for some family vacations, I'm going to buy a family home, I'd love to buy a family car, I need some money to shed that school debt that I accumulated for a degree that doesn't mean anything anymore, or I have consumer debt and I still have enough money for daily living expenses after I'm paying off my debts, my consumer debt or also my student debt, then I'd be taking care of at least those eventualities. And also, A number of us feel like we need more money to cover those unforeseen home expenses, those unforeseen auto expenses, medical emergencies. If you've ever been hit with a medical emergency, you know that your wealth can vanish in a second. And in case we lose a job or we get hurt, it would be nice to be able to deal with those if those things eventually occur, wouldn't it? And a lot of us don't feel rich because we have a picture in our mind that to have more money, to have a good life, we would need some more money to save some money for an emergency fund or a savings fund or to save for future retirement. We need more money. And if we had that, we could help ourselves prepare for all imaginable eventualities, and if we could collect that amount of money. Now you see, if you continue to focus on all of those imagine those eventualities occurring in our lives, there's a sense, there's a feeling that I'm not rich, I'm actually behind. Right? I actually need a lot more. And if you're like me, it becomes to be an area of frustration. It's never enough. And some people say money is money drives you so crazy, it does so because money is evil. You ever heard that? And isn't this proof? If we need all this money to cover all of these imaginable eventualities, doesn't that just prove that money's evil? Money makes me depressed. Money makes me frustrated. Money makes me afraid. Don't we always say money is the root of all evil? We believe around here that money is a useful tool, that God teaches his church that money is a useful tool. By the way, it's only money that will launch my kid into college, right? It's only money. I tried launching her into college without the money. They wrote me a letter and said, I'm sorry, she's going to need money with her. And if you have ever had a toddler running around your home and they start shrieking for something to eat, you know that if you're going to go to the store to feed your child, you're going to probably have to bring some kind of money with you to feed your children. And when my transmission failed on my family vehicle, money, need money to take care of it. And money becomes a tool to help us in our daily lives. So simply put, we need money. The question is, how much money do we need before we're rich? Even though most of us don't ever feel rich, most of us probably don't ever feel rich, the truth is, it's we who are rich. So Paul is teaching Timothy to teach us to learn how to be rich. Well, again, if you don't feel rich, you probably hear our short-circuiting saying, I don't know how a pastor could say that I'm rich. He doesn't know my finances. He has no idea what my bank account looks like. And of course, most of us feel like it's not me who's rich. It's those one percenters. It's those people, the top in our culture, who are hoarding all the money, and they're letting the other 99% suffer. They are hoarding and taking, and they are keeping, and they are, that's the people who are rich. Donald Trump, he's rich. He reminds us how rich he is every time he speaks. He's rich. At least he says he is. He seems to be. And with that amount of money, why can't he find a hairstylist to fix it? Why can't he just, whatever it costs? That's why he can't be rich. It's impossible. For some of us, we're certain it's the kings, it's the princes, it's the politicians, it's the celebrities. But listen to this. Here's what we know about our global economy. Listen to this. If you make $48,000 a year, you are the top 1% of the wage earners in the world. So, you know the 1%? It's made a lot of news the past few years. The 1%, you know who that is? It's us. Globally, it's us. It is the American citizen who makes $48,000 a year. Now, some of you said, well, you're still not talking to me. I am not making $48,000 a year. I'm not in the top 1%. Statistics tell us that if you make $37,000 per year, you're in the top 4% of wage earners in the world. So here's what I want you to see. Paul is telling Timothy that he needs to teach you and I how to be rich. That we need to learn how to deal with our wealth, even though we probably don't feel rich. Statistics tell us, according to the global economy, we are rich. We are rich. And many of you long ago recognized that we are a wealthy wealthy people, no matter how little it feels that we have. But the problem with money, one of the problems with money, is it always puts us at risk for a heart attack. Now, not medically, of course, well, sometimes medically. If you look at your bank statement regularly, here it comes. It's finally going to happen. But the risk of heart attack is this, that there's always a tension pressuring us in our heart to have more, maybe to cover those imaginable eventualities. There's always a heart pressure just pressing on our chest to have more, either more that we want or more that we're going to eventually need. And I think it helps to acknowledge that this thing is happening in our hearts. Even though we don't feel rich, we have this ongoing inner problem, and it's this: our wealth will always be competing for our heart. Always. The wealth that God has given us, the wealth that we're experiencing, the wealth that we have, and the wealth that we don't yet have not yet accumulated, will always, listen, be competing to win our heart over. Competing with who? Competing with God, who created us. And God created us with a heart that worships, and our wealth, our money, our finances is always pursuing our heart, always chasing our heart. And you may recognize this if I describe it this way. If money makes you afraid, if money frustrates you, if money is causing you to feel those types of feelings of fear and frustration instead of freedom and faith, it probably is because money is pursuing your heart and holding your heart hostage for more and more and more. And our hearts take advantage of our, wealth takes advantage of our hearts and holds our hearts hostage. And here's the thing, when we taste, if we taste just a little bit of wealth, we tend not to like it, right? When we taste a little bit of wealth, we tend not to like it. Instead, we tend to love it, right? I remember the first time I saw my savings account numbers start to grow long after college was over. When you see those savings numbers grow, I didn't care about money for 1 second until those moments I started to see that savings account grow, and then all of a sudden I cared a little more, I cared a little more, I cared a little bit more. And what I realized is that wealth really is intoxicating. It really is intoxicating, and most of us don't just like it. We love it. Really love it. And so, must we then despise wealth? Must we embrace poverty? The scriptures teach us we don't despise wealth. We don't feel guilty for our wealth. You're not in a church family who is being reminded every couple of months or every few times a year, hey, we're wealthy and we should be ashamed of ourselves. That's not how we look at it. We don't believe that God teaches that wealth is something to be ashamed of. We believe that God teaches otherwise, that wealth is something instead that should be used as a tool. And the danger of money is not the money itself. The danger of money is how it creates this obsessive desire and craving and affection for more and more and more. And here's the thing. We need to know more than just acknowledging that we're rich. There's got to be more than just knowing in our minds that we're rich. Don't just know we're rich. Take responsibility for learning how to be rich. Paul tells Timothy there are going to be rich people in this world and you have to address them, teach them, make sure they learn something. They have to learn how to be rich. And rich in this world, let me define what this means. What Paul is teaching Timothy to teach us is this, that rich, being rich in this world means an abundance. It means that you have what you need and some more. That's what rich means according to the scriptures. So it's an abundance of material wealth and meaning more than we actually need to eat and to be safe and to be secure. So Paul is saying that the hearts of rich people need to be taught. Now, this, he's not saying, make sure all the rich people learn how to invest their money and see a financial planner, and we certainly embrace that idea on a practical level, right? But what Paul is saying is that the hearts of rich people need some teaching. They need to learn. They need to be, they need to tend to their heart as rich people. Now, handling your money is like handling fire, right? It can be useful if you know how to handle it, or it could ruin your life. It could burn you up if you don't know how to handle it. How many of you here remember that in order to drive, you had to take some kind of driver's permit test, right? You had to learn to drive before they handed you a driver's license. Some of you, in your occupation, in your career, in your work, in order to get a certificate, you had to study and learn, and then you were given a license to learn your trade, right? To learn your particular career that you have. And for a lot of people, they don't really understand fully how to be married and have kids, and so they have read books and they've gone to premarital counseling or marriage counseling in order to learn how to be married and how to be a parent. And what Paul is saying here is that wealth is so important, people who have it need to learn how to deal with it. And so this is where he teaches, specifically he teaches how to be rich, and he explains this, and it has to do with how to tend to our hearts. And by the way, we recommend Financial Peace University if you want to learn how to handle your wealth in a way that you make it useful and you use it as a tool. At the beginning of each year, we have a series called Financial Peace University. We would love to get you more information about that, and it will definitely deal with the specifics on learning how to be rich, and we also will connect you with registration information. You can write your name down at the welcome wall or send us a note, email, and we'll correspond with you on how, when that's going to occur, and also you'll hear about it in the beginning of the new year. So what does God want us rich people to learn about being rich? Here's the first thing he wants us to learn. The first thing he wants us to learn is this, that placing your trust in yourself or your wealth is a trap. You should have this in your notes, placing your trust in yourself or your wealth is a trap. This is what God is trying to reveal to us, is that when we take our trust, and it's so fragile, and we put it in ourselves and say, I am going to put my trust in myself to be the provider. It's going to be me who is ultimately responsible to provide, ultimately. Or I'm going to put my trust in my wealth, that what I do is I ensnare my life. I step in a trap. I put my hands in a trap. And this is called the pride trap. And the pride trap is this, is that we can effortlessly replace God by depending on other things. So pride, it does not mean boastful. So when Paul is teaching here, and he says, teach those who are rich in this world not to be proud. He doesn't mean to be Donald Trump and walk around explaining to everybody, reminding everybody how wealthy you are. He's not talking about that kind of pride. He's not saying it's the pride that's arrogance. It's conceitedness. It's not that kind of pride. In fact, it's this kind of pride. It's self-reliance. It's inner quietness. It's an inner confidence that really ultimately I depend on myself. I've tried depending on other people, but I can't depend on other people. I can't depend on God because I'm not sure God is going to come through and he's going to provide for me. Therefore, I replace God by trusting someone or something else. That's pride. It is independence from God, self-reliance. And so if I put my trust, my deepest confidence in myself, here's some of the things I'm going to say. Here's some of the things that will go through my mind. Here's some of the things that might go through your mind if you are placing your trust in yourself. You might have these phrases going around in your mind that drive your life. And it's this, I am ultimately responsible for what I have. I deserve what I have because I have earned it. What I have is because of my own effort. And if I didn't obsess, and if I didn't stress over my finances, there wouldn't be any finances. That's what we hear ourselves say when we put our trust in ourselves. And then we can also pridefully put our trust in our wealth, and it's a trap. And we might say things like this, I rest in the material wealth that I have. If I have material wealth, I can find rest. The peace and security that I have is rooted in what I have in my home, what I have in my driveway, and what I have in my bank account. And ultimately, the peace, the deep breath that I take every now and then, is based on what I have in my home, my driveway, and my bank account. And if I don't have what I want and need in my home, if I don't have what I want and need in my driveway, if I don't have what I want and need in my bank account, no peace, no rest, no security, no comfort. Insecure, anxious, stressed out. And this is why it is a trap. God has revealed to us that our wealth has the unique power to trap us because it is so unreliable. Wealth is so unreliable. Look at this text. You'll see this passage here in verse 17. Teach those who are rich in this world not to be proud and not to trust in their money. Why? Why not put your trust in yourself, and why not put your trust in your money? Paul teaches us here that God says, because the money that we're putting our trust in, see, our hearts are too fragile to trust in something so unreliable. Because wealth is unreliable. It is so easily lost. It is never really enough for us. It will never matter in the next life, and it's always subject to change without notice. This is the same reason that you and I take an umbrella with us most of the year. Because we've learned something about the weather. The only thing that you know for certain about the weather is how uncertain the weather is. Right? So we keep an umbrella nearby because you and I have learned you can't trust the weather. You can't put your trust in the weather, because just when you think the sun is out and you're going to actually like living here in upstate New York, the clouds roll in with all kinds of other horrible things that fall from the sky and land in our little town here and basically ruin our lives. 6 months out of the year, we already know. You just keep an umbrella with you. And if you keep an umbrella with you, you can protect yourself against the unreliability of the weather. And this is what God is saying, that money is no different. Money is no different. There always has to be some kind of reminder with you that your wealth is unreliable, that it is, in fact, it'll never satisfy you, that your wealth cannot bring inner peace to our hearts. So the question is, how do I protect my heart from drifting away and trusting God alone and trusting myself or trusting my wealth? How do I do that? What can I do to protect my own heart? What kind of heart umbrella can I keep with me to protect myself so that I don't keep putting my trust in this wealth that is so unreliable? And some of you, maybe this will resonate with you. I just have a suggestion here. This could be something that you work into your own routine on a regular basis. Here it is. Daily, it's in your notes, daily preach to your heart. Some of you have this fantasy of being a preacher anyway. Some of you preach to your kids and preach to your friends and family. And here's one for you. Preach to your own heart on a daily basis. Well, what do you say? What's the message? What's the sermon to your own heart? Here it is. I will not place my trust in unreliable riches, but in him who richly provides. I will not place my trust in unreliable riches, but instead I will put my trust in him who richly provides for me. That's where my trust is going to be put. Verse 17, their trust should be in God who richly, what? Gives. He gives us all we need for our enjoyment. What does God give us? All we what? Want. Sorry. Need. Big difference. All we need. Where does it come from? The Father gives it to us. He generously gives to us. And we learn how to be rich. We put our trust not in ourselves or in our money, but instead we learn to trust in the one who richly gives. Everything we could possibly need comes from our Father. And a lot of you, this is a constant reminder. This is another reminder for you. And what we're learning here is that what we've been given is enough because we lean on the one who gives us our wealth. And here's a diagnosis question. Some of you who are still trying to reconcile whether or not this is really something that's happening in your own heart, here's a question for you. Which of these statements creates more anxiety in you? There is no God, or there is no money left. There is no God. And for a lot of us, the idea that there is no God, we can kind of keep on living in a very, very similar fashion. We can kind of keep together most of our routines. But if it ever happened that there is no money, we're out of money, there is no money left, that would dramatically scare us and dramatically disrupt us. And of course, in a lot of ways, it would disrupt paying our bills and so on. But which one of those jars your heart? It's important for us to be alert because there's symptoms of your heart being taken hostage by the desire for wealth. And one of the symptoms is simply this. When I trust in my riches, I tend to be more discontent. I tend to have a lack of contentment. And it sounds like this. If I had more, I'd be happier. I would be happy if I had some more, if I just had a little bit more. How many of you would say, know that money doesn't buy happiness, but you wouldn't mind giving it a try? Wouldn't mind taking a little, testing the waters a little bit. Discontentment. When we have this going through our minds on a regular basis, that just a little bit more, I'd be happier. Just a little bit more, I would finally get to a stage where I can be secure and I can settle in and I could be more comfortable. If I had more, I'd be happier. Or I'm afraid that what I have isn't enough. This reminds me so much of this brand new, this is just recent. I just recently, like within the past few years, discovered an addiction. I had no idea that this was being passed down from generation to generation, but one day I realized I'm a completely addicted to kettle chips. It's new. These are new. These are new to me. Let me put it that way. They're new to me. I mean, I thought regular potato chips were addictive, but then kettle chips hit the scene with that crunch and with that fried curl on it. And then after becoming addicted to kettle chips, they start doing crazy things like introducing kettle chips with flavoring. Biscuits and gravy kettle chips. Have you heard of that one? Maybe you've heard of New York Reuben sandwich kettle chips. Have you heard of that? These are all from Lay's. You can get them in your own grocery store. This has nearly ruined my life. There's truffle fries kettle chips, bacon mac and cheese. Come on. We don't have a chance. There's no chance. Then they went and dropped cappuccino kettle chips on me. Here's what I've learned about kettle chips. The more I have, the more I want. I don't believe there's been a moment in my life where I've had a kettle chip. I put it in my mouth, I chewed it up, and I swallowed it, and I thought to myself, that's enough. Close the bag. Dan, do you want another kettle chip? Nope, I've had enough. Completely satisfied. No. I don't know what it is about kettle chips. One bag's not enough. I don't envision it. Once I get started, and this is how I stay off them, once I get started, I don't have a picture of the end. I don't know how it ends. I don't know how it could possibly end, other than me in the emergency room. I can never eat enough to fully satisfy, and here's what I've also discovered. These are not a reliable source of nourishment. A half hour later, you're thinking, where is that bag? And here's the principle, that there are other things in our lives similar to kettle chips, to you name it. Some of you, you know your own, whatever it is that you know that is just never enough, you could keep eating it. Some people, there's probably limitless lists of things that we can never get enough of. Here's the thing, here's what God is trying to teach us, that there is something called wealth, and it's no different. And the wealth that God has provided for us has this effect on us. That it constantly, no matter how much we have, wealth does not seem to be enough. And much like potato chips are to our bodies, this wealth is to our souls. It doesn't satisfy. We don't get to the point where we say, okay, we have enough, we don't need another dollar. And the discontentment that surfaces in us is a discontentment to have just a little bit more. And we have to actively learn. Listen, you know how I've actively learned? You know how I've learned to stay off of kettle chips? I have decided that we can't have them in the house. I have decided that if there's an aisle in the grocery store that has these forbidden fruit in a bag, I can't go down the aisle. I cannot handle putting a bowl of kettle chips. I don't know, I'm going to get 1,600 bags of kettle chips from my loving church family saying, the Lord led me. I know how much you like them. But listen, you know what it is. Some of you, it's dark chocolate. Some of you, it's anything, right, that's food-oriented. But here's the thing. Haven't you learned that there are some things you can't have in the house? Some people have said to me, I can't stop spending. Here's the solution. Don't go to the mall. Don't open your wallet. Leave your money in the bank. Don't carry a credit card with you, right? So here's what God is saying. God is saying that there is something in our soul that's intoxicating. There is something that we put our trust in. There is something that we begin to rely on that's so unreliable, and it doesn't nourish our soul, and it's called our wealth. And so the principle here that we have to be careful of is this, that we have a heart, and it has to be actively protected from chasing more and more wealth. We have to protect our hearts actively. We cannot passively approach dealing with our hearts. And discontentment comes surfacing out of our hearts, and it comes through inner stress and restlessness, and it starts leaking through our lips as we become more and more discontented. So here's, fortunately, as always, God provides a solution for unreliable wealth. God says, you're not just stuck, with this craving, this insatiable appetite for wealth, and you're just trapped, and I hope you can just use the willpower that I've given you to finally overcome this. Instead, Paul, the apostle, says something very important for us, and we've got to own this. And most of us know this, but we don't necessarily believe this. And our life won't change in this area of wealth until we believe it. So no matter how much you know it, it's until we believe it. And here it is. I have this in your notes for you as well. We will find that God's most glorious riches are not withdrawn from a bank. We don't get God's glorious riches out of a bank. We get wealth and money out of the bank. But his glorious riches, that which is of the greatest value, those are withdrawn not from the bank. Those are withdrawn from his son Jesus. That not in the bank is where we're going to find glorious riches, but instead in the Son of Jesus, the Son of God Jesus, is where we're going to find his glorious riches have been deposited. So what does this mean? This means in our soul, God has provided for us glorious riches that satisfy and soothe our soul. Look at Philippians 4:19. You'll see it on the screen here. And this same God who takes care of me and supplies all my needs, he will supply all your needs. Everyone say needs. Needs. He's going to supply your needs. Why? How? Is he going to give me all the money? Because I have learned one thing, that God has 1,000 cattle on 1,000 hills, and he has glorious supply in a warehouse, and he never stops giving us what we need. But he's not talking about our material needs. Listen to this. God who takes care of me will supply all your needs from his glorious riches, which are not stored in a giant bank account, instead, which have been given to us where? In Christ Jesus. See, that's why gospel people are never actually truly in need. Never. The reason we're never in need is because God has satisfied our soul and on the inner life, in our spirit, though we may not have what we want materially, though we may not feel like we have what we believe we need materially. Here's what Paul's saying. God has provided my material needs, and I know this, that he's going to satisfy your inner needs, your spiritual needs. Your soul is going to find satisfaction in Christ Jesus. Where are God's glorious riches? They're in Christ Jesus. Gospel people are given far more valuable riches, and these riches are deposited in God's Son. And this is where our deepest needs are. Our deepest needs are not to run our debit card and it goes through. God has not promised to supply all of our greeds. He has promised to supply all of our needs. These riches are found in Christ. And here's what we learn. Here's the depth of what Paul is saying to us. We serve a God who possesses the riches of glory. What does that mean? God's glory, his supreme value, worth, weightiness, brightness, the value of God, the supreme value of God is bountiful and desirable, and it's precious. The actual who God is gloriously rich. And what we learn to look at here is that his glory is real. The weightiness and the value and the worth of God is real, and it is the legitimate end, and it's the basis for everything God does, is to reveal how wealthy he really is. And also, we have to be careful that we don't think, when we think of God's glory, we think, okay, this, I know what Pastor Ann's saying. I think of this bright, shiny cloud, and that bright, shiny cloud, this kind of blob of glory, is so valuable. No. That's not how it works. He said, my glorious riches have been deposited in my Son. He is the fullness. And if you want to see the glorious riches that I have made known to you, you're not going to find it in a bright, shiny cloud. You're going to be able to see it precisely, and you're going to see it specifically, and you're going to be able to see it vividly, and you're going to find it in the person of Jesus and his nature, his character, the work that he has done. So it's important for us to recognize that if we're looking at our bank statement and our stomach is just in knots and it's just churning and we are getting notifications. Now, this is the craziest thing. As if it weren't bad enough to open a bill and see how much you owe, now you can get it on your device and they can notify you that a bill is due. And you have these things popping up saying the bill is due, the money's short and it's time to pay up. And this starts to kind of remind you that you don't necessarily have what you need, and your bank statement is reminding you that your finances are broken and you're so stressed out. There's another reminder that God gives us on a regular basis. On a regular basis, we get together and we take a look at the broken body and the shed blood of Jesus, and we say, God's riches are glorious, and he has met our needs in our soul. He has met the needs that our spirit has to be united with God, the creator who has created us. And we have to be careful that we don't just keep pouring over our financial statements, but also we keep pouring over our soul statement, that the debt has been paid in full. And we no longer are going to be asked to pay something that we can't pay, which is our life and death. That instead, God has paid that for us. The riches of God's glory are seen most vividly in the death and resurrection, the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus. They are experienced most fully when Jesus dwells in our heart through faith. And our spirits have a bank account. And when we get together for communion, all we're doing is checking our spiritual bank account, and we're reminding ourselves it's been paid. The debt's been paid in full. What we owed the Father in order to have a relationship with him has been paid in full. Would you bow your heads with me? Our ushers are coming now to pass out the elements of our remembrance ceremony of Jesus.